Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Ben Dell about transitioning from founder to CEO of a company and knowing what kind of founder you are. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hey, thank you. Actually, it's a little bit more than that. It's transitioning from founder to CEO and then back to founder. And I think that's kind of the essence of some of the learnings that I've had over the last few years.
All right. So tell us, how did you become a founder?
Well, I've always been in business. It's something that I've always found that it's either ingrained in you or you just learned through needing to sort of build your life in that way. But for me, it's always been something that I was going to do, run my own business of some description. So I've been in business since sort of 21, 22. I think I worked for someone else for a full year and that was enough. And I ran an agency here in the UK for 10 years and sold that about 3.5-4 years ago. And then since then, I've been full-time in SaaS. I've now got 4 companies under my belt. But what's really, really interesting is that it's only really in the last, and hopefully this is what we'll be talking about, I think, through this conversation. It's only really, if I'm honest with myself, the last 6 months that I feel I am the right founder, that I found my inner founder. I found what really not just makes me tick, but enables me to deliver the most value. And really, I've been kidding myself for the last 10, 12, 13, 14 years. And so, yeah, it's an interesting journey.
That is such an interesting statement. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think it's, you know, we're always told that, you know, busy doesn't necessarily mean that you're effective in what you're doing. And as much as we understand that from a common sense standpoint and a logical standpoint, that's pretty much your life when you first grow and build a business, whether you have co-founders or whether it's just yourself. I mean, that really is the one unifying thing from one company to another. It's the amount of sweat equity that you put in there. And we often wear that as a badge of honor, and we think that we're doing the right thing because we're doing that. And this is standard stuff that lots of people will say, but it's the thing that starts off my story, because when looking back, that 10 years when I ran my agency was all about being busy, but not just being busy, but being busy because I was doing the role that I thought I should be doing. And it's this idea that I've only just realized in the last sort of 6 months that I've realized that there's a real distinction between founder and CEO. And actually, it's really important that you know what those distinctions are, but also where and how you play best as an individual. Because as an entrepreneur, you know, I always felt the common path and therefore the expected path was that you come up with an idea, you grow the company. This is standard stuff so far, but fundamentally that you then evolve into being this super impressive Time Magazine sort of esque CEO, someone that can, you know, turn up every day, wear that suit and rally around the troops, grow the team, get nitty and gritty with the finances, with the planning, with the operations, basically be that superstar CEO. And that being the culmination or, you know, the end point, the goal, if you will, of your entrepreneurial career. You start off messy with this idea, you grow it into something meaningful, and then you become this rock star CEO. And in the last sort of 6 months or so, as I said, I've kind of realized that although that's a very, very meaningful, probably quite common path for a lot of people, for me, being that CEO is actually not what I'm good at. Actually, I'd go so far as saying I'm a terrible CEO. I really am. But I'm a fantastic founder. I'm really, really good at coming up with ideas, identifying opportunity in the market, getting something from nothing to something, so that early sort of hustle, if you will, and not just for the sake of it, not just a side project that you work on because you're trying to flex your muscles and you're trying to see whether something has traction, but you never really get it anywhere. I'm actually very, very good at delivering and launching stuff and getting it to market and getting that early traction, that those early customers and everything else. But I'm really, really bad at the bits after that. Running that team and doing the day-to-day sort of CEO sort of stuff, in inverted quotes, is not what I'm good at. And so I guess what I think is an interesting thing for us to talk about today is just challenging those listening to question what type of founder slash entrepreneur they are. Now, it might not be as simplistic as sort of saying on the one side, you're a founder, or the other side as a CEO. In my experience, knowing how I'm sort of built and my DNA, that's a useful distinction for me to make. But for you, it might be, you know, that you're particularly good at the financial side of it, but you're really bad at the marketing, or something a bit more nuanced like that. That's what I think is really important. Work out where you feel you can add the most insane value so that you can be busy, but on the right things, and push those things forwards.
There is a saying, build a business, not business. So I love all the things that you talked about. But then how do we know, how do we identify our strength? Because it is so hard. Founders and software engineers, very intelligent, very smart people. And many of them have big ego, right? Mm. And so when we talk about, I need to identify where I'm good at, and majority of people say, well, I'm good at multiple things, and I don't want to give this piece of castle, this is my area, I don't want to give it to anyone, right? So how do we first of all identify those strengths and our weaknesses, and how do we learn to let go of things that we're not good at?
That's a really, really good question, because I would say that exact thing to people if I were asked that same question in the past. I would say, well, I'm good at everything. You know, that's why I'm here. This is what I'm good at, everything. And I can do it, and I will take on that challenge. And I think the short answer is, it's not a sexy answer. It's that it takes time. It's that 10,000 hour type thing. I think more so here, this is not about learning a skill in 10,000 hours. This is about learning about yourself over a significant amount of time, recognizing that a certain amount of time is needed for you to observe yourself, to challenge yourself internally, that dialogue, that sort of how you behave, and sort of really just introspect what you do as an individual in your business, to work out at the end of that whether there are any strengths or weaknesses there. Now, in understanding where you have a weakness, in my case, it's being that manager, if you will, that's sort of the CEO, doesn't mean that you therefore have to give up something, or that you have to say goodbye or not think of something as your baby. You just have to recognize that there's someone more skilled in taking it to the next stage. And so for me, what's most meaningful about coming to these sorts of realizations is that it's really for the very first time, actually, because I've been, you know, a kind of shoot from a hip kind of sort of founder, if you will, for many, many years. For the first time, it's actually encouraged me to plan further into the future by recognizing the type of company, the type of structure, the type of sort of strategy, if you will, and rollout strategy, and then sort of growth strategy that plays well to my strengths and to everything else. Understanding that has really enabled me to then plan into the future far further than I would have ever done before, how I want to have these things structured. And so that's kind of quite an empowering thing as well. But as I say, the short answer is that you've got to just spend that time, I think, to really be tough on yourself and understand what you're good at and what you're not. Because we can't be good at everything.
So I wanted to clarify one thing. You were talking about being a manager and CEO. I wanted to clarify that's actually two different roles. So I read this book, E-Myth Revisited. It's a really good book. I think every founder needs to read it just to understand that if you decide to be the founder of the company or the CEO, then you're wearing so many different hats, and that's completely different from what you're used to do. And that's being a software engineer, for example. So that's going to open your eyes into all of those areas that you need to take care of even before becoming the founder. But talking about being the CEO, which is really a leader, and the manager, those are two different hats. In this book, the writer talks about that there are three main hats that any company owner is wearing, and that's being the leader / CEO, then being the manager, and then being the doer. So you need to be at the beginning, if you are just one person, you need to be wearing all three hats. And also Seth Godin is really big on distinguishing between the leader and the manager. So in majority of the times, I see that founders are so bad at managing things, but they may be really good at being the leader. And that's leading the product, having the vision where you want to go, and kind of saying, hey guys, let's go with me. So you're the leader. But then there needs to be someone else If you're not a good manager, there needs to be someone else managing the day-to-day. If you don't know how to run meetings, there needs to be someone, or you need to learn how to do that. So it's really what Ben was talking about. It's really, you can go the long route, which is identifying for yourself where your strong sides are and where your weak sides are, or maybe you can take a shortcut. I've read this great book, I think it's called Smart Cuts, and that's all about like the shortcuts basically that allow you to jump on the next level. So if you take this time and identify where your weaknesses are and when your strengths are, and see who you need to add to your team to help kind of on those weak sides, for example, if you're not a good manager, then have someone else help you with that, then that's really going to be a shortcut and you're not going to have to make so many mistakes. Like, it took you, what, 13 years, right? You said that you had an agency for 10 years and then you sold it, and then now you have like 3 years, you're the founder, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So overall, it took you like 13 years to really come to this conclusion, right? Which is long, long time. So it's really, right now we're talking about, if you are not at the stage yet, it's going to be a shortcut for you to identify where you're good at, where you're bad at, and just be honest with yourself.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, time is an interesting thing. I don't regret having spent those 13 years doing what I did, because it gets me to where I am today, and that learning is invaluable. And I think I'm always of the opinion that most of the learnings and the mistakes I've made and that most people make are a direct result of having lived through that experience. And you may have a semblance of that learning, having, if you were to read it and or to listen to someone talking about it, but to live it, you really embody that. And yes, probably could have cut that 10-year stint at the agency down to 5 or to 2 or something else. But I think in truth, I wouldn't be able to do to the degree I'm doing it now, what I'm doing then, if I'd learned it in the first 2 years, I don't think I would have applied it in the same way. So again, that's not really to sort of tell people that, you know, you shouldn't be reading these things. I think you absolutely should. I think the more you can sort of understand about other sort of approaches out there and other strategies and what other people are doing, I think is really, really powerful. But at some point, you then have to take on that responsibility to embody it and live it yourself in your own world, because your world is going to be entirely unique compared to the world that you're reading about in that book or wherever else it might be. So kind of understanding where that jumping on and jumping off point is, I think, is really important.
Did you have anyone helping you along the way? Did you have like a coach or someone who helped you, come to some conclusions, or this was just you?
For all of its negative connotations, I suppose, all me. The good and the bad, the good, bad and the ugly. Yes, maybe that's why it's taken slightly longer, but a coach might have teased it out slightly earlier, perhaps. But again, that kind of is full circle, coming back to the original point, which is understanding the type of founder, the type of entrepreneur that you are. And that's the way I like to do things. People often talk about situations that give energy rather than take away energy. And the second I feel as if I'm in a job, or that I'm tied to a desk, or that I have now a daily responsibility to turn up and do X, Y, Z that is imposed upon me rather than me deciding to do it in many ways, for me, that saps energy and you don't get the best me. But it's only really recently that I've kind of realized that. So yeah, that's kind of my DNA. That doesn't mean it's yours or that it should be anyone else's, but that's kind of how I get the most value out of my skills, basically.
So what you're saying is identifying what type of founder you are. What types of founders are there?
Good question. I was reading this book. So Rob, who's running a Hey Summit for me, was part my partner there. He sent me a book a while ago called The Founder's Dilemma. And I don't know if you've come across it. I think it's fairly popular on Amazon and all that sort of stuff, on all those lists. I would like to say it's well worth going out there and buying it, but I only got as far as the first chapter, because it was one of those books where it kind of posed certain sort of juxtapositions, if you will, sort of distinctions between, are you this type or this type? And I only got as far as the first one because it really, really stumped me. And it was, so to your answer, what are different types are there? I probably could tell you all the different 20 types if I'd finished the book, but I can only tell you the first sort of distinction, if you will, because that's as far as I got. And it was this really interesting distinction, and I'm going to bastardize the quote here, but it was something along the lines of, what type of founder are you? Are you someone who wants to be king, or do you want to be rich? The distinction being, do you care more about the piece of the pie, as in the amount of the pie that you own, and being in control of it and having the majority shares, and or is that irrelevant in the grand scheme of things because you are just chasing the money and you want to, you don't care if it's a 5% stake because you're betting on the future and you think, well, that if you do that, then that, and you've got a portfolio and diversifying and you're thinking about it in different ways, different sort of parts of the brain, if you will. And I always thought prior to reading that statement that I was, of course, it's about the riches. You know, why else are we in business beyond, you know, that hopefully is what you're good at and that's what nourishes you and everything else. For me, I thought ultimately it's about being richer in life and finding that financial freedom. And yet when I read that, I realized that that wasn't the case. Actually, I would actually sacrifice a lot of money in order to remain in charge of my own destiny. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I have to have 90% of the company or whatever. It's not necessarily as sort of simplistic as that. But I definitely realized that I needed to own the process, if you will. So there is one distinction for you. Are you someone that needs to own the process, be in charge of that company from an equity standpoint, or perhaps just in terms of direction or vision or something else? Is that important to you, the ownership side, or is it really just about jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak, and driving as much value as possible and not really caring about obviously being morally positioned and everything else, of course, but doing it the right way, but ultimately chasing the financial reward beyond anything else? I think it's an interesting question.
So you're currently involved in four companies.
Yes, four active companies, yeah.
As if one is not enough.
It's not, and four is not enough. I'm already planning the next one. Doesn't mean it's the right route, it's just the right route for me, and it's the one that kind of just excites me, and it's kind of the route I like to take. But yeah, and I think this is why, had I have clung on to needing to be or feeling as if I should be that de facto CEO and that guy that sort of turns up and rallies the troops and continues to point the ship in the right direction and grows the company from X to Y or whatever it might be, then clearly having four is not sustainable. But having realized that actually that's not where my strengths lie, it's released me in many ways to kind of really rethink about how I grow and then establish these companies. And so Hey Summit, as an example, is one of the youngest. It's 10 months old. We've got a team of 12 now. Rob, he's the CEO there, and from a day-to-day standpoint, I'm not really involved at all. And that's good because, you know, there are far more capable people now doing a much better job at taking it forwards into its next chapter. And that really allows me, that kind of structural thinking allows me to be a bit more laissez-faire, if you will, with the other companies. You know, have a few more under my belt at one go.
So have you started the company by yourself, Hey Summit?
Yes.
And then you decided that you are not really good at continually pointing the ship in the right direction. And so you've had a co-founder? Or you hired someone to oversee the operations?
Yeah, I mean, so what I generally do is I like to come up with an idea. I like to bring it to that initial point of market. So if you take Hey Summit as an example, established the idea, built out the first version of the platform, did all the marketing, the promotion, got the early customers and got it out to market and basically established it at that first point. And as it was then starting to take off, realized that actually that's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to take it beyond this point. And I didn't really want to, if I'm honest. Nothing about the company at all. I mean, it's an incredibly exciting company and one that I've got so many ideas about and so many sort of visions for and thoughts about how it can sort of evolve, but just recognizing that it's not really for me to take forwards. I've got other things I need to be doing at this stage. And so at that point, brought in Rob to come in as CEO, and then he's built a team around that. And as I say, we've got a team of, I think, 12 now.
That's so interesting when you are able to identify your strength and what you want to do with your life, right? Because so many founders just build those products, and so many founders do have ideas for all of those products. But what happens? They build a product, then they didn't get traction or something, and then they basically are off to their second one because the first one did not work, maybe because they didn't pour enough energy there, they don't know how to market, they don't want to do cold outreach. So, but you are taking this, almost all of your products have some traction, have sales, and are successful, right? How are you able to, instead of saying, okay, this didn't work, let's go try something else? How are you able to still continue with what needs to happen in order for you to go to the level, at least get in some sales?
Well, I think the more I do this, in many ways, the more abstracted I'm getting from the companies earlier on. So launching them 3 years ago, for example, I would be involved for a lot longer day to day in bringing it to that sort of inflection point, if you will. But as that structure starts being built out in a slightly more sophisticated way, if you will, it allows me to not be as involved in it much earlier on. And that is powerful because not only does it allow me to have a portfolio, but it actually allows me to step out of the business. That famous thing that we're always told, don't be in the business, be on the business or whatever it is. But this is really powerful because it means that I can kind of observe, if you will, from a slightly more vantaged point and make slightly more nuanced decisions about what is needed, to your point, you know, to your question about what is actually needed to get this business to the next step, or indeed, is it failing? Has it seen its, you know, success and actually this is its peak and doesn't need to be stepped back? And I think that's often the problem, is that by being so close to a business and so ingrained in it, both emotionally by seeing it as your baby, but also literally by being that sort of acting sort of leader, it can become difficult to let go of a company. And although I can't profess to having solved that, I think probably there are some companies that I should have let go, or that in the future I should let go sooner than later. But it definitely does make it easier, and I'm able to look at things in a slightly different way.
At what point do you start looking for someone to hire and help you with a company?
This has two answers, because there is the individual company and bringing in a CEO or a team or whomever to run it. But then the other answer is building a team that helps me be a better me at that early stage. Maybe that's not what you're asking, but I think that's an interesting one as well. And that's more future planning for how I'm able to continue doing what I'm doing, but with more impact over time. You want to become more efficient and more effective with the companies that you can spin out, and how you do that and how quickly you do it, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think there is a longer term sort of strategy there to build my own sort of internal team, if you will, that does lots of Ben jobs, if you will, in that early stage, and it gets really, really good at growing and launching new companies. But I think your question probably was more about the stage. When do you realize that actually it's time to bring in someone to take the reins of an individual company? There's no sort of right answer, sorry. I think it's literally, you'll know when, and it should at least be when a small amount of traction has been seen from a revenue standpoint. So whether it's your first couple of $1,000 or a month or 10,000 or something like that, something that shows that, because what you don't want to be doing is bringing in a leader or someone or a manager or a CEO or an operations manager or whoever. If you bring them in too early, when the company has not yet found its feet, then the danger is that you spend all your time now coaching this person to bring that company to that stage. And that person, by definition, isn't really the best person to establish that very early growth. By definition, you're bringing them in because they are very good at growing it from a point of early traction beyond. And so bringing them in too early, actually, you become distracted. And even worse than that, you are now an extra step removed from that company, because you're now looking at it through their prism, through their eyes. And so you actually pivot much more sluggishly and don't really get to where you need to be. So I think it's really important that you don't pull the trigger too early. And so, as I say, with Onboard Flow, you know, that is just me at the moment. So if you hop on support as a customer, it will be me replying. If you, you know, see an email newsletter going out on a Friday, that will be me sending it. If there's a bug fix going out, it will be me doing it. And you design me. And that's fine, because it's not at the stage yet where it's able to, or makes sense for me to bring someone else in to take over the reins. I want to have worked out, first of all, what those main levers are in the business, what's working, what's not, where the real value add is. Have I really worked out the proper sort of direction, if you will, the vision for the company? I want to have really embedded those things in first, to a certain extent, so at least I know about them and I'm confident about the opportunity ahead before I then invest in bringing someone to then run it.
Can't you take someone from like another team and help you sending out those emails?
You could, but again, this is where it's sort of getting into the minutiae of just what's unique to me and about my setup. And the way I've always done these startups is that they are set up completely independent of another. They are separate companies with separate teams, with separate legal sort of status, if you will, companies, house numbers, all that sort of stuff. Different accountants, different, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really so that they can have that real sort of independence and ability to diverge should they need to. And the downside of that is that, yes, we could technically share team members and we could sort of share their salaries and everything else. But I've intentionally decided from the early stage that no, each team, each company needs its own team focused on that company. And to share them, I think, would be the wrong thing to do. But going to the that second answer I gave a second ago, I do think there is value in my particular setup in building an internal team, or if you will, a group level team, of maybe just a handful of people that become really expert at that early stage stuff. So, you know, someone who's focused on marketing, someone who's focused on dev, who is able to do exactly what you just described, which is take that early idea to early revenue and know that when they've taken it that stage, they may carry on involved in that company, but more often than not, they'll probably come back to the group, if you will, and get involved in launching that next business.
So you really enjoyed taking this early idea into early revenue. And then once there's early revenue, then you think about giving someone else the reins, right?
Yeah, that's quite honestly, that's the fun bit. Like finding out, it's a little bit of a gamble in a way. It's kind of, first of all, it's your neck on the line, because it's always my idea, and maybe in the future I'll invest in other people's ideas. But for now, I thrive off my own ideas. I enjoy them. I enjoy that creative process. So that risk reward kind of thing of defining that idea, thinking about the brand sort of connection and how it sits in the marketplace and what that opportunity looks like, building the thing out, planning it out, coming up with a revenue model, working out all those fun little bits, and then seeing whether, you know, speaking to those early customers and seeing whether there's any traction. That for me is intensely, insanely fun. It's so much fun, and doesn't mean you necessarily always succeed, but that's the bit that gives me energy. But once you've got those early customers, if I'm being honest, the company doesn't necessarily need me anymore. I'd like to think for my own ego that it perhaps does, and there's always value that I can add. But if I'm truthful, there's now a scale, a graph being plotted of my enjoyment and the growth of the company, and mine goes down. So why would I continue to put myself in that position and for the sake of myself and the company?
That's a very interesting thought. I never thought about it. And I think majority of other founders do not think about it this way. They think that I'm the one who built it. I'm the one who needs to kind of reap the benefits of what I've done and what I've grown. The problem is what I find majority of founders struggle is they usually don't have marketing experience. They don't have sales experience. So yes, they're able to build a product, but then they're not able to take it to the early revenue stage. And this is where majority of founders struggle. So you, on the other hand, when you said that you'd like to hire those little bands who are doing basically the things that you don't need to spend your time on, I thought that you were saying that, okay, sending out those emails campaign or answering those support tickets, those would be the people who would do that for you. But what you're saying is that you have not built the structure yet. So that's why you want, and I completely agree with that you should not hire anyone before you are actually doing those jobs that you're trying to hire for, so that you know what problems they're going to be. You know, you can set up the process for them so that they can do, and then you can identify if there's a problem or no. So what you're saying is that you are hiring those people, but not on the early stage where you have not done this job yet. You do this job first, you identify the problems, you fix all possible issues that can come up, and then once you are kind of easy sailing, this is when you can hire someone and have them do this part of job.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, also as individuals, you know, whatever your stage in life is, wherever you are in business, it is always still an element of managing risk. And there's no greater burden, if you will, on a business than HR expenses and employee expenses and bringing people in. You know, if you do it too early or too late, you know, timing is key. And so for me, it's as much about doing the bits that I enjoy and not the bits that I don't. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it. But it's also just recognizing that if I bring in a team too early, that could really damage you financially and slow you down and prevent the business from actually getting to where it needs to get to. So I'm constantly looking for sort of indicators and signs, if you will, that the company is in the right direction and getting to a stage that then gives me that confidence. Again, coming back to the point about managing risk, when it gets to a certain stage, can then feel as if I'm not really being risky anymore by bringing in that personal team, because I've now proved that it's, you know, at a certain stage. So that's something that drives me as well.
But I also want to kind of share this thought with the listeners, because hearing you saying that hiring team too early can damage the team, again, that's talking from your perspective, right? Because you know your strength.
Yes.
Majority of founders, what I find is that they are their own bottlenecks, because they think they can do it themselves and they cannot. So they struggle for like years and years and years, because maybe there is some small revenue. Maybe there's like between 3 and 5 and 7K MRR and it's growing at like 3 to 7%. But that's because you are in a comfortable zone. And it's not like it's not profitable. It's somewhat profitable, but it's not at the level that you want it to be. And so you are being this bottleneck to your own company success, because you cannot do it by yourself. You don't have knowledge doing this yourself. And so you need to kind of think about what's next. And doing all of those jobs by yourself, answering those support tickets, just takes away from this opportunity for you to take a whole 2, 3, 5 days and think about what do you want to do, where this company is going, what do you want to do with the company. I hear founders, when I recommend them taking at least a day off and think about their long-term goal and strategies and where they see themselves in the company, they come back with so many thoughts and ideas that they would not be able to come up with being head down and working on this all the time.
I make this distinction between not just understanding the type of founder that you are, but the stage of the business that you are most effective at. And as we've said multiple times now, my focus and hopefully my strengths are in that early sort of stage, that getting to early traction. And the benefit of thinking about it in that sort of staged sense, you know, I thinking about the particular stage that the company is at, is that it allows me, almost gives me permission to go head down in the way that you were describing just now, in terms of being fully focused and head down, you know, doing the support and doing the emails, doing the dev, doing the marketing, doing the webinars, doing the whatever else it might be. But knowing that it's a short-lived experience. This is not me for 3 years, and then finally, you know, you pull your head out of the sand and you go and you realize you don't have a business anymore, that or that you haven't built those repeatable channels or whatever else it might be. So I agree with you. I think if you're not careful, you can be doing these things and just revert to being busy. And by the end of it, you really haven't created a growing or sustainable business. Hopefully what I'm doing is doing it in such a way that I'm time boxing that period, because the way I throw myself into these early stages is absolutely not sustainable. But it's because it's such a time boxed affair that I naturally create this sort of rhythm, if you will, in my month, as months and years go by, I sort of create this sort of rhythm where I'm working obsessively in the way we just described, but then maybe having a month where I'm then hiring someone to then run that company, and then another sort of few weeks where I'm thinking about the next thing. And so there's a lot of on and off, that sort of natural rhythm, if you will, that I think is a byproduct of just the way I've sort of structured things. Again, totally personal to the way I do things, not necessarily the way you should do it. But for me, I think it kind of works right now because it has that sort of stop and start sort of approach.
Is there anything else that you want to share with the founders that listeners can find useful?
Hopefully there's bits of wisdom from what I've said, because what about to come out now will not be full of wisdom, I'm sure. I think the thing that I've always felt has done me well is to read and absorb knowledge, but to an extent, and understand that actually the majority of what you should be doing is not reading and absorbing content. It should be doing the stuff in whatever that means for you and your business and your setup and your skill, your role, whatever it might be. But the more you are living it, doing it, the greater you'll have an appreciation for the knowledge you've then read prior. So, you know, think about it in very simplistic terms. You know, if you want to divide a week and you're reading for 2 hours, you should be doing for the remainder. And it should be for me, it's always something like that. In fact, I very rarely will care to read too much about business strategy or anything else. I guess I'm absorbing it by doing what I'm doing and speaking with who I'm speaking with. And so there's a lot of it going on through osmosis, but I'm very careful about sitting down with a book or a blog post and taking a bit of guidance at gospel, at sort of face value, if you will, and focusing more of my time on doing things and learning and challenging myself on whether what I've done is the right thing. And for me, that's always done me well.
What book was most impactful for you?
Ah, well, this is an easy one, because for me, it's always the ones that inspire and to help ground me and give me ideas and food for thought. And I love pretty much any business biography, because it's that point I made a second ago about far more important to live and to do the thing than to read about the thing. And I think business biographies are sort of typify that really, really powerfully, because you are reading about someone else having lived that thing. They're not literally telling you how to do something. It's down to you as the reader to interpret the lessons that they've learned, the journey that they've had, the path that they've been down. It's down to you to interpret the impact and the meaning behind it, and whether or not you care about the meaning and the lesson learned and everything else. And so it's kind of an open-ended thing. And so I love business biographies, but particularly Carnegie by Peter Kress, I think it is. I love the whole robber baron era with Carnegie, Rockefeller, JP Morgan, those sorts of things.
I see some founders are looking for those books that are like short versions of the books. And to me, it was always like you are reading the book, and you were talking about those books that are inspire, ground you, gives you some ideas. When you're reading those shortened versions, I think they do not give you the inspiration. They do not give you the ideas. I really, when I read or listen to the books, that's when I'm not necessarily taking this information like from the book to learn, right? But to get some ideas. And I think those shortened versions do not give you those ideas. So that's why I highly encourage, if you're reading a book, do not read a shortened version. Do read the whole book, and not necessarily for the sake of learning, while this is important, but also see what some ideas that you can, that can jump into your mind.
Yeah. David Cancel, if you listen to Seeking Wisdom, I think it is. I haven't listened to it for a while, I must confess, but he always talks about this notion of idea sex, and this idea that you are, when you're consuming content, whether it's just reading biographies or interacting with people, whatever it is, and this knowledge, this stuff is just sort of going in, and you're not, it's in your subconscious in many ways, but it's later on that these sort of various different sources of content and ideas kind of meld together and have idea sex. And then you wake up the next morning or you're in the shower, and that's where those bright ideas come from, because you've kind of allowed yourself to, through osmosis, kind of just take on sort of content and ideas and inspiration in different forms. And that's really powerful.
Where can listeners know more about you and connect with you?
God, if you want to know more about me after this, God help you. I'm on Twitter, at Ben Dell, BENDELL. I need to do more. I'm much more of a, I think most of us like this. I'm more of a consumer or reader, if you will, a consumption sort of Twitter person than I am a writer, but I need to do more of that. That's pretty much it. But if you head to heysummit.com or onwardflow.com or helpshelf.com or missingletter.com, then though you can check out the companies as well, but at Ben Dell is probably a good place.
Thank you so much, Ben. This has been such an insightful conversation. Really, I think eye-opening conversation. Thank you so much for that.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone, and so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people? Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side, this is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance and as a result remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.